And that's the kicky music that means it's time for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Trey Graham, sitting in for Linda Holmes, who's still off in the vicinity of Los Angeles, while I am stuck here around the table with most of the usual crew. Glenn Weldon, tell us what you do for NPR.
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And you over there looking exhausted and generally overstuffed with folk music. Who are you, sir?
I am Stephen Thompson with NPR Music.
And Barry Hardiman, how did you manage to get back in here?
I just followed the trail of breadcrumbs.
And you do what for NPR?
I am an editor at Talk of the Nation, NPR's news talk show.
We actually relieved Barry from her usual role of standing outside the studio door with her nose pressed against the glass.
My arms full of books.
Barry, can I just say, I'm really happy to have you here, because finally, it's not only me bringing the effervescence. It's tough being the sole pixie on the panel.
True.
I appreciate it.
We have a lot of pixies.
Alrighty then. As I mentioned, Linda Holmes is still at TV Critics Summer Camp, learning about leather working and basket making and, you know, a bunch of the new shows we're going to be watching starting this fall. If you follow her on Twitter, you know that some of those shows sound like they're going to be pretty great. But as Linda explained, back when the networks did their upfronts, the statistics indicate that year after year, many, if not most of those shows, will turn out to be what we call regrettable. So we thought that in Linda's honor, we would make this episode a kind of supersized regrettable television roundup.
Did we?
We kind of did.
I feel like we were mostly going to rip on the TV show Same Name.
Well, that's only our first segment. First up, a show that brings new meaning to the ideas delicacy and taste and noblesse oblige. Same Name, a newish reality program in which gigantic celebrities like David Hasselhoff trade lives for a few days with what you might call their nom de homonyms. I'm sorry I worked on that for several minutes. Anyway, the show is like the love child of Wife Swap and Undercover Boss.
It is exactly like the cross between
and
those two.
And you would think that would be enough to make anybody think twice about putting it on the air, and yet it is airing on CBS, which used to be called the Tiffany Network because it was the classy one. Yeah. Stephen Thompson, I believe you found the show profoundly moving.
Well, given my intense love of both Wife Swap and Undercover Boss, nothing could be finer than to watch David Hasselhoff mingle with the noble savages of Central Texas. Who are introduced in the most dignity-inspiring way with
banjo music under the sequence in which these people are introduced. It is true. The editing room jokes and the production jokes on this show are epic.
Actually, the first thing that came to my mind was an episode of The Simpsons in which they're watching TV and there's like a new cop show.
His name is my name.
The main cop character on this cop show is Homer Simpson. Mm-hmm. And it's this big thing, and he's like this hero cop. And there's a story in the newspaper the next day and the headline is, "Local Man Has Same Last Name."
Yep.
and actually, the best thing about that joke, one of my favorite Simpsons jokes of all time, is that the front page of that newspaper is like a little picture of a mushroom cloud, and the headline is, "It's War!" Which is like never acknowledged at any other point in the entire episode. But anyway, Local Man Has Same Last Name is the entire idea around which this series is based.
Oh, yeah.
And the fundamental problem for a TV show like this, and I don't mean to take up everybody's discontent toward this show.
There are so many grievances.
There are so many grievances. I don't think I'll get to them all. But there's no incentive for there to be any tension.
There's no incentive for
there to be any kind of narrative. Even on a show like Undercover Boss, about which I have gone on the record as saying it's fundamentally vile.
Mm-hmm. Condescending.
Not only condescending, but it is a press release for these companies.
For the company.
I've already talked about Undercover
Boss. Yeah, we're not going down that rabbit hole again.
But in this case, the celebrities can't be a heel. The celebrity is sort of presented at worst as sort of like, how does the shower head work at the commoner's house?
Right.
And
how does this baby work?
That was my favorite part, where the crying baby of the man I shall henceforth refer to as Tex Hasselhoff was annoying the Hoff Hasselhoff at 3 o'clock in the morning. And there's a night vision shot where you can clearly see the microphone cord where they've wired the baby up so they can catch the sound of the baby crying.
Of course he's crying!
I did not notice that.
I was not watching closely
enough.
Yeah, that is the closest thing to conflict in the premiere episode of the show, is baby annoys David Hasselhoff.
You know, so clearly, because it is one of these shows that thinks it is pandering to everyday Americans when it is, in fact, massively condescending to them. They can't present those people as anything other than requiring the services of a queen for a day situation. Yeah. So, like, here, David Hasselhoff presents them with new lawnmowers.
Oh, you just gave it spoiler.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ixnay on the oiler spay.
I loved, by the way, how long it took for the garage to go up. So you had the awkward moment of everybody staring about
that.
What
was,
it?
That was creative
door.
Tension. Yeah. You thought that behind that garage door might have been Kit.
He was going to give them Kit. Glenn Weldon.
I actually didn't see the Hasselhoff episode. I only saw the Kathy Griffin episode.
I'm glad.
And it played like an extended edition of Kathy Griffin, My Life on the D-List. I can't imagine that David Hasselhoff as a celebrity is as self-aware, as in on the game as Kathy Griffin is.
No.
She kind of played it. And
it was a very different vibe.
If you have Kathy Griffin feeding jokes, at least you're going to have that.
She's a performer. She's doing bits. She's making it, you know, nominally entertaining. The one thing I really objected to is they got a woman from Atlanta, Georgia, who sells fiberglass yarn,
right,
because fiberglass yarn is a thing that needs to be sold,
it's
apparently.
It's funny, apparently. To
replace Kathy Griffin, and she moved out to Hollywood, and this woman was obviously a devout Christian who expressed some ambivalence toward the gay thing, so that's the example that we were talking about, Stephen, of fakey tension. When there's a skill set involved in a show like this, your Project Runways, your Top Chefs,
right,
your RuPaul's Drag Race, for example, then it feels like you're getting something out of it. But when it's nothing but fakey tension, when you feel the heavy hand of a particularly heavy-handed producer challenges like this. So they invited a bunch of Kathy Griffin's gay friends over for a pizza party.
Yeah.
Now, A, these muscular dudes with 0% body fat
have never eaten pizza in their life.
In their life.
That has carbs. You
That's right.
That.
It's like they might have air pizza,
right,
you know. I'll have half nitrogen, half oxygen, please.
Yep.
But the other thing is, she expressed some not exactly hurtful things, but certainly unenlightened things.
Just,
and that low-level lack of drama became the entire arc of the episode.
And it felt terribly manipulative.
It really did.
It felt really unfair to the lady,
mm-hmm,
who seems otherwise perfectly nice and really together and a great family person. Her family is amazing.
Yeah, it was great.
That tension felt so manufactured,
mm-hmm,
and unfair to her that I got angry on her behalf.
Right,
exactly.
It was mean.
So you guys watched another episode.
We
of this
watched
show.
Two whole episodes.
I only watched the one.
I watched half of each.
Okay.
I was trying to cram, and I also fell asleep a little bit during the half. When I clicked on the little play after you guys sent me the link and forced me to watch this, and I realized that it was an hour. It was literally based around the moment where David Hasselhoff, Tex Hoff, or however you've named him, says, "Hey, David Hasselhoff, table for three." Mm. Your name isn't David Hasselhoff. That's the entire conceit. That's
right.
The only thing. And the thing is that I like Wife Swap. I mean, mm-hmm, when I say like, I mean, I've watched it with some energy and, you know, I a lot to say about it. But this, I've never been curious about what it's like to have a celebrity's first and last name. I never got to wondering about it. And so to construct 43 minutes around this was so, and even around the Hoff, who at least has, you know, I mean, it's fun to look, it's weird. Does it seem to you that his right eyebrow is like, is actually tacked up to?
It seems to me that
like there's
that
a thumb
several,
tack in there.
Several pieces of his face might be tacked
actually,
up in one way or another.
Actual thumbtacks.
Okay, people, we're going to move on now to part the second, in which we will consider some television that may well turn out to be regrettable and some that might turn out to be fantastic. And for that, we are going to welcome our surprise roving correspondent.
Wait, what?
Linda Holmes, live from Pasadena.
That
or
was,
wherever she is.
I feel like something just happened in a soccer game.
It kind of did. Hello, Linda.
Hello, people.
Aww.
Linda has been covering the Television Critics Association summer press tour, and I cannot believe we are doing this. We have her on Skype. How's it going out there? I understand that when you're not rubbing elbows with Doctor Who, you've been throwing elbows at the producers of the Playboy Club.
Yeah, the Playboy Club had one of the rougher sessions out here. They decided to give the lesser-known feminist argument for the Playboy Club, which people had a little bit of trouble swallowing. They had a little bit of a rough session. Certainly, some of them have gone better. We have now been through 3 days of cable. That's the unaffiliated cable. So it's like HBO and like Oprah. Oprah was here. And
Oprah.
Oh,
my
yeah.
goodness. Short of the Playboy Club, what is the most regrettable act of television you've seen so far at TCA?
Let's see. Well, today I went to a lunch for Bravo's new show, Most Eligible Dallas.
Ooh. I just mostly looked over at Barry Hardiman just to see how excited she would be.
Bravo?
Bravo?
It's basically a lot of very, very bright blonde and very orange people. It appears to be like the Real Housewives if none of them did anything, even with their families.
Whoa!
if you take the fact that they have families out of The Real Housewives, and you just had the parts where they like go out and fight, you know,
it's actually The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
So that's what that one is. And although I cannot claim to have sat down and watched an entire episode of Most Eligible Dallas, the lunch did not necessarily convince me that I needed to watch a lot of it. Although, as I told Trey, I knew he would find this very exciting. I sat at the lunch table with the millionaire matchmaker.
I squealed when I got this.
So
email.
Did Barry just
I
now.
I love her. That's my next career.
No. She's tiny. She's
Is
very,
she?
Very tiny. Yeah.
She's got such a big personality. I always think she must be like 6 feet tall.
Can we return briefly to the question of eligible? Because I would like to know how they're defining eligibility. Mm-hmm. In what way are these people eligible?
I really don't know. it appeared that they are defining eligibility. As I said, blondness and orangeness seem to be important.
But not necessarily intelligence or business success or inspirational qualities.
Yeah,
as opposed to all the other programming
I know,
on Bravo.
I was gonna say, right.
Which
yes,
is a total meritocracy.
Yeah.
Bravo
There's so
meritocracy.
So many cookbooks.
Right. The millionaire matchmaker said that she knew of them, like, who was single. So I assume that means they're not all single. So I assume some of them are eligible but not single, and I don't know exactly what that means.
Oh dear.
Sexy.
So that was a little bit questionable. We have also seen, there's been some stuff that looked, you know, interesting and good. Surprisingly enough, that session that I mentioned that Oprah was at was about Rosie O'Donnell has a new talk show that's going to be on Oprah's network.
And I saw on the Twitter that you found Rosie highly entertaining.
She killed. That particular day, she did very, very well. Most of the people I talked to had the same reaction, which was that she was kind of on her game, and it was the way that she's more likable. And so that was a good session. NBC was yesterday. And the session that they had for Prime Suspect, which is their remake of the Helen Mirren thing.
There's,
right. And theirs is starring Maria Bello. And that session was good. I think that I've seen that pilot. I think that's pretty promising.
That's a fascinating actress. I'll be looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah. There are a lot of ups and downs in this particular point in the tour, because we've seen a lot of the cable, and then we saw the 2 days of PBS. But then yesterday was the first day of the network stuff. So we still have a day of CBS. We have a day of Showtime and the CW. We have 2 days of Fox and FX. And then we have 2 days of Disney and ABC. So
awesome.
Linda, what did you think of the Will Arnett show, Up All Night?
I liked it. They had a good panel for it. It was surprising. The panel was a little bit low energy for the people who were there. Obviously, Will Arnett and Christina Applegate and Maya Rudolph. You can never really tell whether that's just because, you know, everybody is tired for whatever reason. So the panel, I think, was not as uproariously funny as people expected it to be, but the show is pretty good, and they have retooled the show a little bit to try to capitalize on Maya Rudolph having been obviously successful in Bridesmaids and some of that stuff. They have beefed up her role a little bit in that show. It's good. It's funny. You know, with comedies, it's hard to tell. You want to give them a little time to find rhythm, so it's good. I like it.
So in addition, we saw that Downton Abbey, PBS made news with Downton Abbey, is coming back in January 8th. What's the other sort of top-line news from TCA this year, Linda?
You know, yesterday we found out from NBC that they are going to use The Voice after the Super Bowl, so that's always a big announcement when you find out what exactly is going to go after the Super Bowl. You know, we haven't had the kind of breaking news that you have sometimes when, you know, we had Conan and Simon Cowell and all that stuff. There's been a surprising lack of big, big news so far, but then we've got a couple networks left to go. There is a rumor going around that Charlie Sheen is being killed off on 2.5 Men, that they're killing that character. My guess is there will be questions about that to CBS. I don't know whether they will answer that.
Yeah, I just saw some headline to the effect that they were going to have his funeral on the show, which should
so
be hilarious.
Wow.
And I'm guessing would probably include a little bit of pointed commentary from
Chuck Lorre.
Mm-hmm. Chuck Lorre, yeah.
I think they probably will do that. I would not be the least bit surprised, and I, at this point, I wouldn't blame them, I don't think. So,
you know, as our host, Trey is interested in top-line news, because Pop Culture Happy Hour is nothing if not a...
Newsy.
Is not torn from the headlines. I am much more interested in the hilarious comedy juxtaposition of Linda Holmes and bizarre Hollywood...
Creative people, celebrities, showrunners.
Just sort of any time you can put Linda Holmes in the Playboy Mansion.
Oh, yes.
Put Linda Holmes in the company of Jeff Probst.
Mm.
Anytime you can take Linda and put her with the orange, leathery, facelifted,
eligible.
So I think that what Thompson is asking for is highlights and lowlights.
I want lowlights. Tell us. Give me the wackadoodle. Make with the wackadoodle.
As I mentioned, we had Al Michaels yesterday talking about football in his session, and he was kind enough to do a dramatic reading of some Katy Perry lyrics. So that was pretty cool. They had a PBS special about 60s rock and pop, which brought Davy Jones to the stage. I don't know when the last time was that you heard Davy Jones talk, but Davy Jones can talk, let me tell you. It was a little bit of a Davy Jones filibuster.
That's actually the name of his band, the Davy Jones
filibuster. That's the new band, yeah.
Right. This was one of my favorite stories. Last night at the NBC party, it was very, very loud and crowded, and I could not figure out how to get out of the way. And eventually I found this couch, and I wound up sitting by Jillian Jacobs, who is on Community. We got talking, and we talked a little bit about the show and a little bit about Press Tour. And then she found out that we had already seen the PBS presentations. So at that point, she just wanted me to tell her all about the new Ken Burns documentary about Prohibition. She's been reading a related book, and she just was full of questions about that. So anytime something like that happens, I always like that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Very cool.
I always like that kind of story when it's a very human encounter with a person from television.
I like it when, you know, you're able to do a celebrities are people too type segment, but it's not just because they also go to the store.
Right.
Or because they've traded lives with someone in, you know, Central Texas.
Linda, is it weird to be experiencing pilots in a group environment like that? I mean, you're experiencing television, which is a very intimate medium with a group of people who are hyper-informed, and you must have to fight groupthink, yes?
I was going
to
say, there must be a risk of sort of following the mood of the room.
I think especially in the age of Twitter, as soon as the panel starts, I mean, everybody has generally watched the pilots on their own time, and then they come in, and when the panel starts, the problem is if you follow a bunch of other people in the same room as you on Twitter, you know, you get that little bit of, you know, a ripple goes through the room of tweeting about how stupid something is that's happening. For example, as soon as they started in on the Playboy Bunnies are empowering thing yesterday, that sort of built, I think that's one of the problems they have, is that people kind of encourage each other. So if you feel like you don't like what you're seeing, it kind of builds and builds and builds. Although, you know, every show that a lot of people don't like has somebody who's tweeting the whole time, like, other people don't like this, but I kind of liked it. I thought it was good. You do have to be conscious of fighting that, I think.
All right. Well, Linda Holmes, thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your busy cocktails and celebrities schedule to join us peons here on Fun Floor 5.
Remember when Linda was on the podcast all
the
time?
Oh, my God.
Come back soon.
Cool. I'll see y'all soon. Bye.
Bye.
In keeping with the theme of regrettable television, as some of you may be aware, the HBO series Entourage is coming to its end, and I know what you're thinking. Wait, Entourage is still on? It is, and we thought we would take this time to play a little game, which we're going to call In My Fantasy World, Entourage Ends As Follows. In other words, we are going to script the finale, imagine the fate of the principals, and let's be frank, these are people very few of us actually care about. Barry Hardiman, what dire things have you imagined for Vincent Chase and his friends?
So here's the thing. I am not a fan of Entourage. And as, you know...
I'm sorry. I thought we were all taking that as a given.
But I have now found out that you have seen every single episode.
That is
true.
We are really burying the lead.
It is true. I have to confess.
And I mean, this is the man that knew slings and arrows.
It's true.
And that, you know, as a son, I'm this... I mean, it was so deeply disappointing to me that I hardly know what to say. Now,
Barry,
that said, I am a person, I think you all know, that when I am not a fan of something, I want to reinforce that with myself. So I've actually, I too have seen almost every episode of Entourage.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And then sometimes I actually will, you know, I realize that I've forgotten the whole Mandy Moore season, so I actually, this is terrible, I went through and I
you
read
episodes. You rewatched it, didn't
no,
you?
No, no, no. I rewatched a couple. But I also, I reread the synopses on the HBO
just
website.
Just so you're up on the continuity.
It's, yeah,
right?
Exactly. It's really, really embarrassing. But reminding myself of Entourage also made me realize, I mean, it's almost like the same name of HBO. I mean, this is the flimsiest of conceits. I mean, truly, truly.
Well, I think the conceit basically consists of dudes.
Right. of actual conceit.
Dudes. Yeah, exactly. Dudes with money.
Right. Yeah. There are a couple of things that are, I do think are sad about the end of Entourage. What are all of those super hot extra girls going to do?
Right.
I mean, there is every, you know, the last one with the girls flooding around with Turtle and the tequila thing. I looked at my husband. He was like, what are these little chits going to do? I mean, what's going to happen to the children?
What are these little what?
Well, with the tan shoulders and the tiny and the thing, I mean, still tying up the shirts and the, like, barely wearing anything, all those extras that fill the club, you know, that are winking at drama, for God's sakes. I mean, all the people that go to Vincent Chase's rehab home party, what is going to happen to those women?
Keep in mind, as we breed ever more lower sort of bottom-feeding celebrity-based reality shows, who is going to be cast on the next season of Celebrity Sex Rehab?
That's true.
You ultimately wind up, like, this woman was Miss Teen USA in 1998. I mean, it's
or
people who...
Or this woman's name is Kathy Griffin.
I was going to say. Yes. They're going to wind up on the fourth season of
Kathy Griffin's, name-only
doppelganger. But, I mean, they worked so hard on their tummies. I feel sad for them. So there's that. And then the other thing I found really insulting, people always refer to it as Sex in the City for men,
mm-hmm.
which is incredibly insulting. It is like Sex in the City.
Whom?
It is exactly to me. But it is the Sex in the City 2 of for men.
Oh,
and to that end, what I would like to see as an ending is I'd like to see everybody go to Morocco and stage a huge gay wedding with Liza Minnelli. That is what I want to see for the end of Entourage. And maybe, you know, be a stampede of camels.
You think a drama plus turtle? What are you thinking there?
I like the drama plus turtle. I mean, you know, then you really have, you got a nice height differential, the guns.
Oh my.
You know, I mean, who can even remember that Eric is there?
Glenn Weldon, you have theories, you have hopes, you have dreams.
I need to go back and unpack the fact that you, Trey Graham, have seen every episode
episode. So, but then I am a bitter ender.
I'm willing to accept that Barry Hardiman has seen a lot of it because Barry Hardiman watches Real World Road Rules Challenge.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I can't believe you added me on that.
Envision, if you will,
Big Brother.
The Venn diagram. Yes. Here we have one circle of Entourage fans, mm-hmm. and here we have a circle of aficionados of German art song.
Uh-huh.
And you're telling me that these circles do not merely intersect, but they overlap.
They overlap,
it's
and
a total
I
eclipse.
I would invite the listeners of the podcast to write in and tell us, confirm for me my suspicion that overlap is bigger than you might think.
You know, my nephews love this show, but they love it for the sort of wish fulfillment. And that's what the show is. I mean, the theme of the show is Wouldn't Be Cool If, or technically it's Bros Before Hoes.
Mm-hmm. Don't call the extras hoes.
Well, it's...
the extras and the girlfriends and the occasional wives. And, you know.
It's weird for me to slag a show that's about wish fulfillment, given how many superhero comics I read in a given week. But superhero comics are ostensibly about something else. They're about power differential. They're about the use and abuse of power. They're about morality. This show is about what it is ostensibly about and nothing more.
Same.
So what I'm thinking is that Vinny is cast in the sequel to Aquaman.
Uh-huh.
He drowns. He goes to hell, and one by one he's joined in a sort of limbo by Robert Wool Arliss. By the dude from Dream On. What was his name? Brian somebody?
Oh, man. Brian. Oh, shoot.
And that Mike guy from...
Mike. The Life of the...
Life of the Married Man. Yeah. And they're all wearing identical pink party dresses. And they turn to him slowly and they say, "Stay with us, Vinny, forever and ever and ever." Okay. And then cuts.
Nice.
Black.
Nice.
Nice.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
Wow.
Stephen Thompson. Fantasies about the end of Entourage.
I know so much more about Same Name than I do about Entourage. I think ultimately I will just leave it at I would like the entire cast to get together, since all those actors now are done with their respective contracts, and I would like them to join the cast of Franklin and Bash.
High five, bro.
Glenn Weldon would watch that show. Mm. All right. I thought you were going to say you wanted the entire cast to get mercury poisoning.
You know, and that's the thing. Wow. I mean, I certainly was contemplating all sorts of... I mean, the end of Seinfeld, where all the characters are suddenly sort of found out. The veil is pulled back, and the show acknowledges that these are actually terrible, terrible people. Mm-hmm. But certainly something
is
like
that. Is that what that was
actually
about?
That was sort of the theme I took in my own vision of how the show might end. And I'm going to warn you now; it's a slightly complicated vision.
So more I'm just complicated
gonna,
than Glenn's.
Just going to start from the top.
Mine is about divine justice, Barry.
whereas mine is about sort of an earthly justice. Hmm. So from the top, Ari Gold and his brother, the mayor of Chicago, get caught in an FBI sting. And charged in connection with a complicated revenue skimming scheme connected to the issuance of film permits in the Windy City. It involves hookers, kickbacks, sweetheart deals, and the wholesale disparagement of Toronto. And it turns out that the main LA-based informer for the feds is Lloyd. Barry Hardyman.
Barry Hardyman's
with me. I see.
I would watch this.
Next, E, sitting courtyard at a Lakers home game, gets stepped on by Andrew Bynum. He's E, so it's fatal. Meanwhile, a horrifying rehearsal room accident.
No, Trey, did you have to Google Andrew Bynum's name to get a Lakers player?
Yes, absolutely. Meanwhile, a horrifying rehearsal room accident on what else? Dancing with the Stars leaves Johnny Drama voiceless. So the new animated show based on him is recast, but the insurance settlement means that he never has to work again. Vince, whose rehab experience at the top of season 8 turns out to have been the catalyst for a spiritual awakening that plays out across the final season, becomes a Hare Krishna. And lastly, Turtle comes back from a Thailand vacation as Turtleline.
Okay.
Oh.
What is making me happy this week is Entourage fan fiction.
I'm into it.
Which brings us to the actual making us happy segment.
The actual happiness.
The thing with which we traditionally close out our show, and I'm going to start with Glenn Weldon.
I have taught you, children, about peanut-free mom. I've taught you about your Aunt Diane. Today I bring you news of your friend from high school.
The actual
tag is friend from HS. Here's her bio.
This is on Twitter.
Yes, thank you. This is a fake Twitter persona. Her bio is, we went to high school together and you totally at least enjoyed me somewhat. Now you left, but I still live in our hometown and am loving it. Ha ha. So this is a glimpse into an area of Twitter that I never see unless I am foolhardy enough to click on a trending topic or on a hashtag that has a misspelling in it. So this is the land of lots of exclamation points, lots of question marks, lots of all caps, and it's a land where everybody thinks they can get away with spelling like Prince. Mm. Lots of twos, yep. The number two, and you. Lots of U's.
So this sounds like every email I wrote to Stephen today. This is terrible.
Here's a sample. Hashtag Follow Friday. My fave local spots at Chili's, at TGI Fridays, at ExxonMobil, hashtag Yummers with a Z. Don't need to tell you it's with a Z, right? You pretty much get that. Hey, atheists/Jews.
Oh, no.
I'm in.
No.
I'm in already. You don't need more than that. But there's more. Hey, atheists/Jews. If there is no God, how are there constellations? Question mark. OMG, that weird dude I hooked up with works at Subway. Ugh, that used to be my secret lunch place. And finally,
I think secret is the genius word there.
Secret is the best part. When are they going to remake Wedding Crashers? It's so funny, but needs to be remade for our generation. So that is friend from HS, your friend from high school.
I will follow him or her immediately. Barry Hardyman, what's making you happy this week?
I recently returned to work, and I'm still going through my old email. And as you know, I work in news.
Yes.
News, with a capital N. And I have received a couple of pitches, and they're always ridiculous, but I received a pitch
from
today.
From a publicist.
I'm not sure who this is from.
Oh, okay.
But it was sent to the NPR news desk, which is filled with extremely sober-minded folk who are making decisions all the time about breaking news. And I thought this would make a marvelous opera libretto, but I really must actually read this out loud at some point in my life. And I thought to you boys would be the way to go.
Yeah, here we go. I'm done with this.
All right. The subject is disclosure. You can hear the opera already, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hello. My name is Ara, and I live in Belarus. Please, as a citizen of this planet, I would like to tell you that there are extraterrestrials out there in the sky, and there is plenty of footage on YouTube you can find and report on.
From no less an authority than YouTube.
Exactly. Yep. This is actually the winner here is, I am sane. And, and you can find thousands of people like me who knows what is going on the planet. We are tracing this progress from the 1990s, the transformation of humanity, and the ETs are here to help. Please disclose the information of their presence. Best regards. Ara. Now this is
best regards.
Best regards. Now this was sent to ABC News Story Ideas, Bloomberg.net releases, Evening at CBSNews.com, who may actually take this and turn it into the next same UFO show. CNN.com, FoxNews.com. So this has been sent around to everybody. Anyway, this was just in an email inbox that was filled with, you know, 10 beauty ideas to keep you sane during the summer. I mean, literally to my news. This one really...
Could texting, .. Yep. make you fat?
I actually have gotten so many things.
I get those all the time.
That gave me the happy. So I had to have the opportunity to read that out loud. I do also want to say that Project Runway restarted. It is at an absolutely absurd length. I mean, the first one was literally like 90 minutes.
Yeah,
it was absolutely.
Ooh,
it was,
yeah.
Which
yeah,
just means so much Heidi. And Heidi is in real like German dominatrix mode, which is awesome. So I just, you know, I know it's real boring. We all watch Project Runway and same name and all those cool things. But this.
It's cool things like same name.
It's so fat and delicious that I had to give it a shout out.
Oh, I should say so. Stephen Thompson, making you happy this week.
Well, I was going to talk about the iPhone app Songify, but Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton beat me to it on the new episode of All Songs Considered.
Oh, no. Well, give us the 10-second version for those of us who don't listen to both.
Free app on your iPhone. You just sing a little chunk of a song, and it creates an entire song around it in that massively auto-tuned way, and it makes you realize just how incredibly easy it is to make songs now.
Awesome.
That's perfect for my email.
That's true.
You should absolutely do that.
You could, yes, you can craft
You could write your opera.
Ara from Belarus, I'm coming.
So you said that was not what's making you happy.
Right.
What
is making me happy is just a string of fabulous musical experiences that I've had in the last few days. Seeing Bon Iver in Washington, D.C. on my birthday.
Happy belated birthday, Stephen Thompson.
I'm so very old.
Yes.
And over the weekend, I was at the Newport Folk Festival in Newport, Rhode Island. Foolhardily drove up from D.C. to Newport and back.
And saw a lot of amazing stuff.
A ton of amazing stuff. You know, I saw a pretty remarkable, you know, assortment of legends, your Elvis Costellos and your Emmylou Harris's and whatever, and, you know, a whole bunch of, like, indie folk ensembles with banjos and horns, but also under a Lego-sponsored kids tent saw Pete Seeger standing near probably about 10 feet with an unobstructed view from Pete Seeger, who is 92 years old. Seeing him surrounded by adoring children and singing traditional folk songs, you know, with a single manly tear dripping down each cheek, seeing that the day before my 39th birthday and A, not feeling so old,
right,
and B, just witnessing a life well lived was tremendously inspiring.
I think a life well lived is always a thing to be happy about, right?
Absolutely. Well, and I was thinking, you know, in terms of a life to which a normal person could theoretically aspire. Not that you're going to accomplish everything that he accomplished, but to be what he has become.
Yes.
I was tremendously moved.
Yes, indeed. Well, what's making me happy this week is, among other things, the opportunity to guest host this podcast. Thank you all for putting up with me. A-List is back, as I have suggested before.
That's not what's making me happy.
No, what's making me happy is that I have stuck to my resolution not to watch it, but I am reading the recaps at TomandLorenzo.com, which, if you haven't discovered, oh my goodness, the scorn will burn your face off through the computer screen. It's amazing. What else is making me happy this week is I'm about a week away from a 2-week vacation with my nephews. That's really all I got. That's all I got this week.
Did everybody hear the beleaguered sigh from Glenn Weldon when he said that? It was not a loud sigh, but it was there.
I cannot help.
It was deep.
The smallness and the darkness of Glenn Weldon's soul.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
Much as it pains me to say it, that brings us to the end of this week's Pop Culture Happy Hour. But don't be sad. Come and continue the conversation with us at facebook.com/PCHH. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter. Glenn Weldon is at GH Weldon. That's WELDON. Barry Hardiman is at B Hardiman, HARDYMON. And Stephen Thompson is at I Dislike Stephen, because even his mom will tell you that.
Aww.
You can follow me at
My
Trey
mom
Graham.
Likes
Happy
me.
Birthday, Stephen.
You can follow me at Trey Graham, which Stephen likes to explain as follows.
Do you want me to sing it?
It's up to you, dude.
This is a big moment.
Trey with an E, then Graham like the cracker.
And we promise it will never, ever make another return appearance. Linda Holmes, our absent champion and chief operating officer, is at NPR Monkey C. And you can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, which is KATZIF. Mike's band Hello Come In is responsible for our In and Out music, which, if you have a soul, you are chair dancing to right now. That's it for this week, folks. Thanks for being here, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening.